What is on record in the various lawsuits so far? And I understand there's quite a bit more, which I won't go into, but I'll give you what is on court records with regard to bank accounts. In the period of 1972-1973, an organization called Religious Research Foundation was created. Religious Research Foundation was nothing but a bank account in Liechtenstein. It provided no goods or services. It did nothing in terms of disseminating the tech, providing auditing. People who went to FLAG, as many of you know, who may have made out checks to Religious Research Foundation, had their goods and services provided by Church of Scientology of California during certain critical years, which owned FLAG, that corporate entity. Church of Scientology of California was a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization, purportedly acting under the laws of the state of Florida in the United States. The funds, in fact, went to Religious Research Foundation, to Liechtenstein, and were, in fact, diverted, in some instances, directly to L. Ron Hubbard, which is what they call the Norman. It is one of the tax laws that no part of the net earnings of a nonprofit tax-exempt organization can inure to the benefit of a private shareholder. If it does, it loses its tax-exempt status. Millions of dollars were diverted. In addition to that, although L. Ron Hubbard had allegedly resigned from all church control and management, he had de facto control over that bank account. In excess of $100 million ended up in the bank account. In addition to that, the known evidence is that between May and November 1982, Howard Schomer personally transferred between $30 and $40 million from church accounts to Hubbard accounts. There has been an IRS civil investigation that's been ongoing for many years. And in fact, after a lengthy trial, the Church of Scientology of California was stripped of its tax-exempt status for, among other things, enormity. There is currently an IRS criminal investigation ongoing relating to the RRF issues, Religious Research Foundation issues, the transfer of the money by Howard Schomer, and other such control over church funds. In the event that those indictments are forthcoming and document in detail not only the items that I've just mentioned to you, but other such financial irregularities, some of which are on court records, for example, the payment of $250,000 of church funds to set up a federal judge in Tampa, Florida, by getting a yacht and putting hookers and drugs on the yacht and trying to lure the judge onto the boat. The use of church money for those types of operations is, as common sense would tell you, illegal. Those kinds of things would give great sustenance in terms of the evidentiary record for a suit by the group whose trust has been breached, namely yourselves, who believed that those funds were being used for legitimate purposes. In the event there is an indictment, in the event it does appear on the public record in even greater detail that there has been financial mismanagement of the type that I've just mentioned, of which I tell you there is hard evidence, then the evidentiary platform, the evidentiary basis for a suit such as the class action suit has extreme vitality. Because in the law, all of you people who gave to a non-profit tax-exempt organization that you believed was obeying all the laws with regard to the use of those funds, the breach of those laws, which strips the organization of its tax status, legally entitles you to regain what you lost. It is a very powerful evidentiary basis for a suit such as this one. In the evidence, the very specific evidence, such as provided by Howard Schomer, for example, such as provided by Laurel Sullivan, for example, such as provided by tape recordings of high-level church officials dealing with the diversion of monies, is very powerful evidence to support your case. Those are among the items of evidence. Yes, sir.
There's a statement from the Freedom newspapers to us in our mailboxes, or at least to a lot of us in our mailboxes, that tries to stir up our old fears of David Rockefeller and the world takeover, linking you with support by David Rockefeller as one of his minions. Would you comment on that, please?
I got the question.
It's asked about the Church's accusations about the connections between Rockefeller Foundation and
as the head of the anti-religious movement, which David apparently subscribes to too, I'm happy to report that the church is willing to place me in that company. Now, there is incredible irony in this recent Freedom in terms of the black PR policy of the Church of Scientology and my connection to the Rockefellers. Unfortunately, to protect a couple of very innocent people, I cannot tell you everything that I would like to tell you, but I will tell you this. In 1980-81, the Guardian's office created a report which people like Jerry Armstrong, Laurel Sullivan have seen. That report purports to link me with the Rockefellers. And it did it on the basis that I know a psychiatrist named Jack Clark, who was an evil perpetrator and kidnapper and torturer of people by deprogramming them. And because of my connection to Jack Clark, Jack Clark had assisted a family, which is an offshoot of the Rockefeller family, in terms of what the organization had done to the daughter of that family. Now, timing is very critical in life. And prior to the summer of 1982, although I knew Jack Clark, I had absolutely no knowledge that anyone, the Rockefeller family is a very big family, that anyone in the Rockefeller family had been targeted by the Church of Scientology. The involvement of Hubbard in the 50s, I really knew nothing about. With apparently David Rockefeller was upset with L. Ron Hubbard for some reason. I don't know. I don't know David Rockefeller from Adam. I've never met him. I've never talked to him. I've never had any communication with him of any nature or description. That includes Nelson, Lawrence, etc. But a very curious thing occurred. In 1981, I had supported all of the litigation, which had then been going on for 3 years all by myself. And I had no other support. Jerry Armstrong came out in 82, and he brings this document, this GO prediction report, eval. And in the document, there were references to this offshoot of the Rockefeller family, whose daughter had been used by the GO, apparently unwittingly. And in this prediction report, the church was endeavoring to connect me, for whatever reason they thought appropriate, to the Rockefeller family, which I am happy to be connected to. I mean, I'd like to be more connected. I hope they support the class action. But the ironic thing is I didn't know them from Adam. We were hurting for money. The report comes out, and the report is just nonsense. I mean, it's so ridiculous, it's almost funny. I gave the report, since Jack Clark is prominently mentioned and I knew Clark, I gave the report to Dr. Clark. Dr. Clark gave it to someone who knew this offshoot of the family. And if you read the report, you would be as outraged as this family was. Because the clear inference was that confidential information had been taken from this person's files. The clear inference was that clear breaches of trust had taken place in an effort to target people, to use the GO vernacular, to harass them. So I received a contact from a lawyer who wanted to know what this document was, who apparently had had it somehow through another source, through Dr. Clark. And I told him. And he said, well, this is an outrage. How can they collect this kind of information and do this to these people? This girl never knew that this was being done. So then when subsequent litigation developed, the defense of which involved the protection not only in the exposure of that document, which is among the Armstrong exhibits, and the exposure of other such documents, and in other cases in which I was defending, similar issues arose, I received a donation from a trust in New York. The GO in their prediction report created a donor for me. And the people are the kindest, most loving, gentlest people that you could imagine. And they believe that someone like Gerald Armstrong, Paulette Cooper, and many others should be defended. So they gave me what is, in fact, in terms of the scope of this litigation, a paltry amount. An amount that has been swallowed up, that goes in 6 months of the litigation that's been involved. But they helped me, and they had the courage to help me. And now the associations that have been created in the Freedom magazine or newspaper, the Nazis and David Rockefeller, are just ridiculous. Those are the facts. Yes, sir.
you have and not look at the papers?
Good question. Who owns the Church of Scientology?
I do.
There are numerous legal issues to answer your question. Numerous. To get into some of the more pertinent ones, I'll make a short effort. The bigger ones are so massive that they probably can't be answered in the little time we have. The Hubbard estate and the legal issues that involve the IRS investigation involving the diversion of funds and the millions of dollars that have gone back and forth in bank accounts and whether they should have and who owns them and are they now going to be transferred to the church involve extremely complex criminal issues, which I believe are going to be litigated very shortly. That proof in that criminal case, should it come to fruition, will be the proof in the pudding of your case that you really own the Church of Scientology, that it is you who should end up with the assets, whether they're in Hubbard's estate, in Liechtenstein bank accounts, church bank accounts controlled by Miscavige, and however they've gone back and forth. You have a claim to those funds in that estate because you are the church for all of the reasons I talked about. In terms of some of the complex legal issues in probating that estate, L. Ron Hubbard Jr., Ronald DeWolf has a claim. A disenfranchised, allegedly alienated son. The firstborn son of L. Ron Hubbard, who has his father's name, who he claims is a victim of the GO, is, I'm sure, going to make a claim. Alexis Valerie Hubbard Connolly, the daughter of L. Ron Hubbard and Sarah Northrup, who they are claiming is not the daughter, is going to have a very interesting claim. The creditors of L. Ron Hubbard, the people who have sued him, the people who have been victimized by him, are going to have claims. But where justice lies, and for a moment I'll divert, where justice lies is a very simple thing in this overall litigation picture. You take the $39 million lawsuit. Our girl, Julie Tichborne Christofferson, who's been involved for 3 months or 7 months and gives him $3,000, wins $39 million because a jury of your peers, 12 men and women, when they hear the PC file culling and the GO activities and training Guardian's office agents to harass people and all the things we've talked about and the diversion of funds to RRF and the falsity of the documents like what your fees buy that L. Ron Hubbard made less than an org staff member. When the jury heard all that, they were confronted with a very unique problem. Does Julie Christofferson deserve $39 million? It's your money. And you're going to give it to one person? But under the law of punitive damages in this country, you have to punish such conduct so it won't be done again. So a jury spoke. And they came up with this incredible amount. The judge couldn't believe it. No one could believe it. But after listening to 12 or 11 weeks of testimony, hard day-to-day evidence, which you people could have had the right to sit in and listen to, they were shocked that a religion, that a church, as I've been shocked when I first saw the Washington documents, they were shocked that an organization was doing this. So they said, $39 million, take it from the church even if you give it to this one person. The judge said, basically, no, we can't do that. So it got overturned, and it's probably going to be retried. A lesser amount probably would have withstood. But the jury was so outraged in seeing hundreds of documented pieces of evidence of the type of conduct that I've alluded to and talked about tonight. But that Christofferson case raises an interesting issue. The timing of the class action is really now. A jury would hear, in your case, the same evidence. But they won't give it to little Julie Christofferson, this one person. They'll give it back to the people who own it. So in terms of the probating of the estate, in terms of this mishmash of these transfers of money back and forth, and who owns what? Who owns the Knotts material? Who owns Solo Knotts? David Miscavige says David Mayo doesn't. And what I say, as I told David Mayo on the phone today, whoever paid, whatever amount of money they paid, $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 for Solo Knotts, they own it. And your suit will prove that they own it. Your suit will contest ownership of a religious exercise, which they say is copyrighted, trademarked, that you have to pay $100,000 for, and that you can only get from them after you've paid the money, and that you can't continue to exercise and practice that belief. Balderdash. Yes, sir. Yes.
Yes, if we sign our names to the class action suit, are we letting ourselves in for harassment?
Yes. But there's many of you. There's only so many private investigators that can be hired. Yes. Good question. Good question.
He's asking about people who were in church management, who committed some of these crimes, who are now like Ben's clients.
First, we'll run through my list of clients. Tanya Burden. She was a servant. Laurel Sullivan. A servant of L. Ron Hubbard. Not in the guardian's office. Public Relations Officer L. Ron Hubbard. Carol Garrity, Janie Peterson. 2GO, not B1. Public Relations and the branch that social coordination. Who committed crimes. And they came to me. And they signed affidavits. And they said, well, look, I paid my $33,000 and I paid my $66,000 and I got sucked in. And after I was in for X amount of time, they put me in the GO. Yeah, and I culled Tonya Burden's PC files. And I took them to Sherman Frederick's at the Las Vegas Review Journal. They admitted they did it. They gave validity to what I'm saying. They confronted that overt. They confronted that wrongdoing. In my judgment, they warranted protection. All my other clients are public, low-level staffers, Martin, with the exception, perhaps, of Martin Samuels. Jerry Armstrong, non-GO, C organization, a servant, worked to perpetuate Scientology. Martin Samuels created an enterprise in Oregon to perpetuate Scientology. And then, and this is the unique aspect of Samuel's case, as it is in the unique to many people in this group, I believe. As soon as he got in a position of strength, as soon as he built what he believed in, even though he was a mission holder, non-GO, non-staff, a mission holder, as soon as he built it, it was stripped from him and fed the power of Miscavige. Hold it. Don't take her out. Please, don't. Don't miss. Sit. Sir, hopefully enough to compensate me for all my troubles and my clients. Martin Samuels, to answer this now absent woman, I wish she hadn't yelled. I wish she had stood up and made her position clear. She had a position. If she contested what I've said, I wish she hadn't done that. And I wish she would come back and say factually on the record what her position is. But bring her back. I will give you a few details about Martin Samuels. Bring her back if she will talk and lay facts out, and she won't yell. Bring her back in. Martin Samuels, look at the result. Look at the result. He creates these huge organizations that are worth millions of dollars. And anyone in this organization who knows Martin, who knows the situation, will know that I am telling you the truth. He gets gangbang sec checked. He gets stripped of his organizations, and he is left penniless. Not a sou. Miscavige ends up with the organizations, ends up with the bank accounts, ends up with control. Martin loses his wife, his children, and what he's devoted 13, 14 years of his life to. So look at the result. The church can claim, as they have, I'm sure, in many of your declares, and only of you, only those of you who have been declared with those ridiculous false allegations that have been made in your declares. And those of you who have been subjected to them, you know what I'm talking about. You know it's bullshit. Can come in and allege that he did this, that he mismanaged, and he did this wrong, and he did that wrong. Maybe he did do things wrong. But he created this huge organization for Hubbard and the church. And believe me, when I tell you, in his heart, he felt he was doing it for L. Ron Hubbard. And then, because there was a power struggle, he got stripped of everything. His wife, his children, his family, his 13 years of work. Now you tell me, what was that issue about? The perpetuation of the faith or money? Next question. Yes, sir. Thank you. I have a great deal of respect for that question and your willingness in an atmosphere that I basically control because I'm the speaker of getting up and confronting what I'm talking about. When I say that L. Ron Hubbard or Scientology is a fraud, I will repeat what I said earlier. We are all human beings. We all make mistakes. We all have good and bad. We all have overts and withholds. When you take an overt and you perpetuate the overt to perpetuate your power, rather than confront the overt at the risk of losing that power, whether it's money or power itself, you have become a fraud. You have not confronted what was a lie. It is inappropriate to say, in a generic sense, and by that I mean the broad sense, L. Ron Hubbard is a fraud. L. Ron Hubbard was a human being. But it is also appropriate to say that if he lied about numerous things in his background, those were fraudulent statements by a human being. If those statements were perpetuated for the control of power, then that is a level of fraud that is even more significant than the original misstatement. If you divert millions of dollars into your own bank accounts, when you say in writing, in documents such as where your fees buy, that he has received less than an org staff member, that's a fraudulent statement. If L. Ron Hubbard gave you auditing in the E-meter, in life repair, in OT3 if you believe in it, in solo knots if you believe in it, and he gave you those things that in your hearts gave you yourself in your own truths, then those things are not a fraud. But then if he used or people around him used, the funds that you bought or paid for, to perpetuate power, then you've created an institution that perpetuates fraud. And like most people, like most institutions, you've got to confront your mistakes. It goes to the legacy of L. Ron Hubbard. History will tell you whether, in a generic sense, as you raise, L. Ron Hubbard's a fraud. Or history will tell you, L. Ron Hubbard gave you auditing, in life repair, in new hope. Or history will tell you that the fair game doctrine, in the guardian's office, in PC file culling, was so aberrational and so wrong as to overshadow the first, in that when the issue became purely money in a power struggle in 1981, and if the legacy is that these, the money, the power, the greed, the fair game doctrine, attacked the attacker, GO activities, predominate over you, are who are the Scientologists who believe in the creed and in the auditing. If this predominates, then generically it's a fraud. If the legacy is that this predominates, then truth, as it always does, emerges over evil and wrong. And that's what we'll live. But if you think that it's easily arrived at, and that you just should sit back, and because the legacy can be good, and accept everything that's told to you, forget all the overts, and not correct the bad, you will allow a legacy to continue which will be generically fraudulent. If you do the other, you will create a legacy that was part of L. Ron Hubbard, lawsuits like people like life, civil litigation. A doctor gets sued because he made a mistake. He was negligent, and a person is paralyzed from the neck down. You say as a jury, there's too many medical malpractice cases. The doctors are too picked on. The person whose respirator shut off because it was improperly set, who has now left three children and is paralyzed from the neck down because the doctor wanted to go play golf, and he cared more about playing golf than taking care of this patient. He may be a good doctor, but what he did to this person was wrong, and the law compensates. If he did it again and again, then it is such an overt, and he has left such a trail of victims, that punitive damages come into play. That's life, that's law, that's justice. It is inappropriate to use, in the sense that you've raised, sir, an all-encompassing generic statement, in the sense that you're thinking L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology are a fraud. But it is necessary to inquire as a Scientologist, as someone who confronts truth, that if L. Ron Hubbard did deliver so much truth, how could he lie about so many things? Which I say he did. And it's not because I'm a better human being than L. Ron Hubbard or worse. It's because I represent people who've been victimized by it. And I've seen the documents. And I know it to be true that there were monumental lies told. The issue becomes, as I earlier stated, how they affected lives that believed them when it's found out that they're false, how they affect the motivations and intentions of the people who subscribe to those falsehoods, but more significantly, how it reveals the motives and intentions of the people who perpetuate the falsehoods. If a falsehood once confronted is not recognized to be such, then you do L. Ron Hubbard a disservice. You do Scientology a disservice. In that fact, you recognize every minute of an auditing session. That's what life's all about. There's nothing more I can say. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.